You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning from 6:30. I'm here with the former Brentford and Barnet manager, Martin Allen. Morning, Martin.
Morning, Stoney.
Real Madrid provide more of an opportunity, Cesc Fabregas says, for Hazard to achieve his dreams, which is to win the Champions League and to win the Ballon d'Or. Do you think that's a fair comment?
Yeah, I think it is a fair comment, but the Real Madrid team at the moment is pretty poor, Stoney. That is going to need a lot of work. And
Hazard makes him a lot better, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, but that's a poor team.
You add in Hazard's goals and assists that he got for Chelsea, and you take them and you give them to Real Madrid. They're pushing Barcelona much closer this year, aren't they?
Yeah, much closer, but they're still miles from it. There's no way next season they're going to win the Champions League. There's absolutely no way. They're going to touch clubs like Liverpool, Man City, Juventus even.
They look a fair way off, don't they?
Yeah, they're nowhere near it.
They've signed Luka Jovic, it's a start, but yeah, they are a fair way off. But I guess for Hazard, he just feels like he needs a new challenge. You can't blame him for this, can you?
No, and I think growing up, Stoney, his hero was Zinedine Zidane.
Yeah.
And I think with Zinedine Zidane, that is a massive attraction to go and play for him. He has won the Champions League. And they will rebuild that Real Madrid team. There's no doubt about it.
Around Eden Hazard?
Yeah, around him. But they will need quite a few others. They're way behind, Stoney. They're way behind.
It does feel that way. Let's hear what Eden Hazard had to say. He was interviewed by Darren Curry, was it not? Darren Curry, I think it was the BT Sport guy. Well, anyway, let's have a listen.
I don't know yet. You know, I think he's will decide in a few days. My target today was to win the trophy, that's it. That's the only thing I was in my mind.
What is your thinking, though? What decision has to be made? What do you have to take into consideration?
I took my decision already, you know that.
You've made your decision?
Yeah. I said that 2 weeks ago. Now it's dependent on the club, so I'm just waiting.
Depending on Chelsea or someone else?
Both club. I'm just waiting like you wait, like the fans wait. So you will see, you will know in a couple of days.
Do you expect to be there next season, or is this a goodbye, Eden? All the fans want to know.
Yeah, I think it's a goodbye, but in football you never know. You know, my dream was to play in Premier League. I did this for 7 years in the biggest club in the world. So now maybe it's time for a new challenge.
Yeah, that was Darren Curry on BT Sport after the game. And in the end, Eden Hazard, it's time for him to go, and he knows it. And I think there was a point in that interview when you could see him almost shrug his shoulders and go, yeah, Of course I'm leaving. Of course I'm. But I mean, the only thing he can't say, of course I'm leaving, because the clubs haven't agreed a fee. But we all sort of feel they're going to.
I think probably, Stoney, behind the scenes, they've probably have agreed a deal. His agent would have sorted out his own personal contract. The clubs would have sorted out a deal before that game. I would expect over the next few days there'll be a big announcement. And I think the Chelsea fans that I know, they have massive respect for him because he's kept going and given them everything all the way through. Given them everything. They love him and they will continue to love him. His goals last night came as no surprise. Going out, winning that European trophy for Chelsea, Champions League again, finishing third. He had a brilliant end of the season. And I think he'll go out with his head held high.
And with the love of the fans as well, by the way.
100%, Stoney. 100%. And all those, if he ever comes back, say, with Real Madrid to play at Chelsea in the Champions League, he will get, without a shadow of a
enormous
doubt,
ovation.
A standing ovation.
Yeah, enormous, because he's a stunning player. And as we said yesterday, there are a lot of subplots, Petr Cech in goal, which we can talk about. But, you know, it was a tale of the two number 10s. One didn't really turn up. The other one won the game for Chelsea. And you know what? When I said yesterday, I can live with it if Eden Hazard turns up and takes the game away from us, I sort of can. I was feeling a bit miserable about my team. But when you watch Eden Hazard play, when you watch what he does and what he can do and how difficult he is to play against, he's just better than everyone else on the pitch, isn't he?
Oh, he is. He is.
Fabulous.
I was lucky enough to watch him play a few weeks ago in a home game. And
I had good seats.
And Chelsea were dominant. They were playing brilliant one and two touch football in the final third. And I was sat behind the corner flag, not too far from where the Chelsea players' families were. Great seats. And I could see it all in front of me. Oh, my God, Stoney, he was so quick. His one touch, two touch, change of direction, change of speed. He was brilliant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's great to watch. Anyway, by the way, it's Daryl Curry who works for BT Sport.
Darren Curry's the manager of Barnet.
Of Barnet, that's right. That's what I've realised. Daryl Curry did the interview last night and got a lot of praise from various journos because in the end, they want the story. And that's the scoop from last night, even though we all know he's leaving. He actually got him to say it, which I think is important. Kieran has come into the room. He's got back pages for us. Well, it's all about Eden Hazard, isn't it? Well, are you all right with that headphones?
I think
you're sitting on the lead or something.
No, I'm there.
Oh, you are there. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay.
Because
he thought you were going to have to do the back pages really crouched over like the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
I'm quite tall, aren't I?
You are. You're tall.
I get not my freakishly. Limbs are a bit
not
you know.
Freakishly tall. No. But do you know what? You're tall.
He's not Peter Crouch tall.
He's
is
not
he?
Peter Crouch tall. He doesn't have to.
I don't have to bend through corridors.
Through
or,
doorways.
Or doorways.
Do you find yourself ducking down once in a while?
I mean, my mum's 5 foot, so that's always quite funny in photos.
Your dad must be 6 foot.
No,
ten.
He's 5'10".
What happened?
Milkman.
The milkman. There we go. Go on, Martin.
The very tall milkman.
You can't say that about your own mum.
Well, he didn't. You said it, actually,
yeah,
Martin.
Yeah, but he copied me.
Yeah. Anyway, you brought it up. Anyway, the back pages are all about Eden Hazard,
yeah,
I guess,
course.
In the Chelsea.
Of course they are. Ed's the real deal. Obviously, Real deal.
Yes,
you know.
I see what they've done.
Golden goodbye. There's not much to be said other than
he's going. But he said it on the pitch last night after the game.
It was a brilliant interview, actually.
It was.
He really pushed him for that answer. Then when he said goodbye, Daryl Curry knew. That was the moment.
He should have punched the air. Should have turned to the camera and go, get in.
Yeah.
Yes, Curry. Daryl, you should have turned round and pointed to the name on the back of his jacket. Curry, look at that.
Lifted up his pass, you know.
Lifted up his pass and kissed
it. Yeah.
Something like that. I felt a little bit uncomfortable, if I'm honest. It's not that I didn't want the story. We all know it. But I thought, really, you're asking him about this now? But I understand this is about journalism and about getting the story.
He got it, didn't he?
He got it. And fair play to him.
Yeah, and it's the biggest story of the night. Once the match is over, you can't say much more about the match, you know.
Chelsea were very good. Arsenal were terrible.
Footballers give you bland quotes at the end of the game. What you want to do is move on the story. And obviously, all the papers have covered it because of Daryl Curry's excellent interview.
Yes.
But I've also come in to talk about the World Cup because, of course...
The Cricket World Cup starts
this morning.
England against South Africa.
At 10:30. I'm very excited.
Yeah. We should be excited because this, by the way, is the best chance England will ever have of winning the World Cup.
Yes, absolutely. And Southgate, Gareth Southgate, has been a source of inspiration for Owen Morgan this morning. He said that his stirring speech to the cricket team at their pre-World Cup camp in Cardiff at the end of last month has really inspired them. So it's quite interesting to see that cross-sport. I think we had it in the Ryder Cup where Alex Ferguson spoke to the European team. Back a couple of years ago.
I mean, in the end, Martin, if you're in a team and somebody who has managed and guided a team successfully through a tournament or near enough through a tournament, in Gareth Southgate's case, you've got to find that inspiring and you could learn from that sort of stuff, couldn't you?
Yeah, to a point I can see where you're coming from, Stoney, but I think the key word that you just used there was nearly. He hasn't won the World Cup and I think with England being such favourites for this World Cup tournament...
That they want losers around the dressing room, is what you're saying.
I think the expectation and the hope of all of us going into this game, we've got a fantastic team. We're virtually unbeaten apart from that mess-about game against Australia the other day. I think it's going to be very, very difficult with the expectation riding on that team for us to win that World Cup on our own patch.
How interesting then. I mean, from a management perspective, Martin's perspective, he's actually going, yeah, sort of.
He nearly won it, Stoney. He ain't won the World Cup.
No, but we sort of felt like England had a good World Cup and it was unified and we were happy for them and we liked supporting them. It was a joy to watch England in the World Cup.
It was the team ethic, wasn't it? Got them to the semi-final. It wasn't based on ability. There were far better teams in that World Cup.
And the style that we played with. because we've been after a team that can play technically with the ball, haven't we? For all those years, we've been saying, how come all the European, South American young players are brilliant with the football, and our young players, oh my God, all they do is boot it up to a big centre forward, which is what we've watched for all those years. Now we sometimes play with three at the back, we sometimes play with two at the back, we have older midfield players, sometimes you have two older midfield players. It's a completely different style of football that England are playing with, but the inspirational talk from our football leader, who nearly won, is different to saying he did win it.
You know what? You're absolutely right. It's as opposed to, say, Sir Alex Ferguson walking into a dressing room who's got 10,
winner.
12 league titles.
Serial
and all the rest
winner.
Of it. You know what? I guess the proof of the pudding will be in a month's time when we see if England run out in the World Cup final.
Absolutely. And this is a new kind of mindset for the England cricket team, having to deal with a favourites tag. You know, they're used to being underdogs. And now they've got this added pressure of a home tournament where they're expected to win.
Yeah, you know, that is true. And we will see how they will cope with that as well. But Owen Morgan is feeling confident.
He is. And the vice-captain, Joss Butler, has also kind of said some rousing words. And he said, this summer is the biggest opportunity for cricket in this country possibly ever to engage with new fans. And I'm of an age...
On satellite television.
Well... We had this discussion yesterday.
We did, but I think it's worth pointing out that basically 1 in 10 of the population. I made that figure up. It sounds sort of vaguely true. I don't know what it is. 1 in 10 of the population has got a Sky subscription. And what about the rest of them? They have to watch highlights on Channel 5 at midnight.
Yeah,
do you think the kids are really going to engage with it?
We can text them.
We can text them as the game is going on.
Score
the
updates.
Game is brilliant. You should be watching this. If you weren't poor, you could watch this. Something like that. Do you think they'd appreciate that?
I'm sure they would.
Yeah. By the way, what a player that Joss Butler is.
He's brilliant. We have got a serious squad, right? 15, right? We've got a serious squad of 15. And we are favourites to win this World Cup. And there is a reason for that. You know what? I'm feeling encouraged and hopeful.
Yeah, absolutely. And rightly so, I think. We're obviously on weather watch as it's still May, you know, in England.
Yeah.
But it's looking like it'll be sunny intervals this morning.
All right.
With a moderate breeze. So fingers crossed the weather holds up, because when you've got so many games in such a short period of time, there will be a few no results, and that can actually impact on the way the group stage goes. Everyone has to play each other in that group stage.
No doubt.
Which is a new format.
Is it at the Oval today?
It's at the Oval,
What time's that starting?
10:30 this morning.
10:30. We will get out of here and we'll be straight in front of a telly. And we will also, by the way, be learning about the Duckworth-Lewis method in the next month. If you don't understand the Duckworth-Lewis method, well, you're not alone. Because I think there's three people in the studio. I'm looking at you, Kieran. Do you have any idea how it works?
I mean, it's now the Duckworth-Lewis Stern method, because Mr. Stern has got involved.
Who's Mr. Stern?
Not Howard Stern, that guy from America.
No, what, the radio DJ? Yes, that's right. Aside from being a shock jock, he's also quite keen on cricket when it rains a little bit.
An expert.
That's who it is, a bit of an expert.
Yeah, so the Duckworth-Lewis Stern method, I don't even think professional cricketers know how it works.
We're going to get on top of this.
Computer generated, isn't it? All the scoreboards now electronically generated. Everyone's got. There's a system in a computer. Bang, that's the score you need to get, and they get on with it.
Right. Okay. Well, it must be. Listen, I've got the internet here. Surely in there somewhere, there's some sort of information about the Duckworth-Lewis Stern.
Yeah, but
method.
Who's this Stern geezer? Where's he pulled that from?
He's just elbowed his way in. I'm going to call it the Duckworth-Lewis Stern Allen method, because you should have a say as well, Martin.
Yeah.
Love sport.
Now, Martin, you said to me that you think Arsenal are improving under Unai Emery. It was a pretty abject end to the season. I mean, they had 5 games to qualify for the Champions League. They failed to get there by 2 points. And they couldn't beat Palace at home. They couldn't beat Brighton at home. They went away and surrendered at Leicester and at Wolves. I mean, they were bad at the end of the season. They had a chance to get out of jail last night and they did not turn up in that second half. I didn't see our forwards at all. Mesut Ozil was essentially non-existent, got booed off by his own fans. On top of all that, where's the owner? Where's Stan Kroenke? I mean, if we are looking, you said to me, one of the things that Arsenal are going to need to do is they're going to need to invest.
Yeah, definitely.
They are going to need to invest.
Yeah, yeah,
Can you see a possibility of that happening? Because I can't see Stan Kroenke doing anything of the sort. One, he wasn't even at the game. That tells you a lot. This is a major European final and our owner can't be bothered to go out there. I mean, that is not good enough. That is not good enough, Martin.
Stoney, I'm going to reel you in. I saw the game against Leicester City at Leicester and I thought Arsenal were poor that day.
Terrible.
Crystal Palace that you saw. We both saw that game. Yeah, we were there. And I thought Crystal Palace deserved to win.
Well, defensive errors.
Zaha, they could not control. They could not deal with Wilfred Zaha. Going into that game last night, Eden Hazard, for me, is a better player than Wilfred Zaha. Although Wilfred is also a brilliant attacking player. Yeah. Brilliant. It's going into that game. We all kind of know it's his last game. There was no way that Hazard was going to go through that game and not create, make, score opportunities and goals. They could not and they can't handle him.
Do you think...
And what you've got, Stoney, in your ranks is Mesut Ozil. And between them, they are chalk and cheese. His attitude, his effort to run back, track back if he loses the ball... Hazard runs around everywhere for Chelsea, for the supporters, for the club. Ozil, in the games that I watched, walked around, good on the ball, moments of brilliance, but it's not enough over a longer period of time to win games.
No, and do you know who's on the more money? Who's on more money? Mesut Ozil is on more money. It's a joke that we have been left with a player like that while we're letting go of Aaron Ramsey on a free, a guy who scored two cup final winning goals, and Mesut Ozil is on 300 grand a week, which, by the way, I'm chipping in for. It's partly my money and the other 60,000 who turn up there every week. And by the way, I say 60,000 who turn up there every week. You think that stadium last night was half empty? And that's another joke which we'll get into. You think that was half empty? You wait till Arsenal are 9th or 10th in the Premier League. Let's see how many turn up the Emirates for a nothing game against Brighton in March when we're out of both cup competitions and we're out of the Europa League as well. I think Arsenal are in serious danger. Sorry, Martin, I will let you talk. But I think Arsenal are in serious danger of being caught by Wolves, being caught by teams with some money, being
Everton.
Caught Everton, by Leicester, by Newcastle, if they ever get their act together. If they ever get their act together, Arsenal could be like Aston Villa. I mean, I think this is way more serious than people have ever considered. And whatever you think that Arsenal are making progress under Unai Emery, what I see is we've got a slightly higher points total than last season. What I actually see is we threw away Champions League qualification and then an abject surrender of a performance in the second half of a major European final. That is progress, is it?
Yes.
Last year, we lost to a decent team in the semi-final, Atletico, but we gave them a proper game. With Chelsea, we just rolled over and died in front of them. That ain't good enough. That is not good enough, mate.
Stoney, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying, and I can fully understand. And I think you've probably got the voice there of all the Arsenal fans that watched it on TV last night. You've got the voice of all the Arsenal supporters that went over to back you, which was a ridiculous place to play the game, but that is, as you say, a separate issue.
Yeah.
The fact that he's not there, the owner's not there. If you'd have won, Stoney, you wouldn't have been bothered if he was there or not. The fact you've lost and it was such a disjointed second half performance and the end of last season that we shared in numerous games watching Arsenal, that Arsenal were poor.
They were terrible, mate.
They were poor. But the key to it now, Stoney, they are going to need to spend some money. Their back four is not good enough. But I'm also going to ask you about something else that hasn't been mentioned yet, which I cannot get my head round. And I don't think Peter Cech was at fault last night
no,
for any of the
but
goals.
But why was he playing?
But why, in a game of that magnitude, did they put their second best goalkeeper into their team? Why?
Yeah.
Why would a manager, why would a club, why did they do that? And I'll also go back to the FA Cup final. Who played in goal in the FA Cup final?
Watford. For Watford, yeah. Aurelio Gomez.
He's a nice guy, he's a lovely guy. Everyone loves him. Oh, everyone. Why would you put your second best player into the team in that position.
All right. Well,
last night it was wrong. I don't know why they played Peter Cech.
It was two different questions there. On the first question, Arsenal need to spend some money. They're not going to. If you only have to look at Stan Kroenke and all the football clubs that he owns and all the sports clubs that he owns, one of the things that he basically does is manage decline. And I'm telling you, it's going to happen at Arsenal. In terms of Peter Cech playing in goal, he wasn't at fault for any of them.
No,
he wasn't at fault for any of them. I think Bernd Leno wouldn't have done any better. But he's our first choice goalkeeper. One has to question the manager in that respect. We've got plenty going forward. We are going to talk about some of the non-news stories that are happening. Specifically, some rather ridiculous comments from John Cleese about our glorious city that we are currently sitting in right now of London. But we'll get to that and we'll talk more about Arsenal. And we'll also talk quite a lot about Chelsea as well. Because, you know what, for all my moans, and I'm happy to moan for 3 hours, Chelsea played pretty well last night. They had some
second
good
half.
Second half.
Didn't play that well first half.
No, but second
Arsenal
half.
Arsenal had good patches in the first half.
We did. I thought we played okay, but we fell apart alarmingly. And I'd like to talk about Chelsea as well, because they won the Europa League. And this team, with all the arguments and the managers moving on and everyone's not happy, they got the two cup finals this year and they won one of them and they finished third. Ended up in the Champions League. It's not a bad season for them.
This is Love Sport.
Can we talk about Chelsea for a while? Just make me feel better about myself. And also because they did win the competition last night. And I think it's important to stress, you know, they keep winning competitions. They keep winning trophies. You know, Eden Hazard has won, what's he won there? He's won a couple of league titles, has he not? He's won the FA Cup. And he's now won the Europa League. And it's the second one since he's been there, although he was injured for the first game. They keep getting trophies. With all the turmoil, we looked at the season, in the middle of the season, Sarri was in big trouble. We said, oh, he's only got a couple of days left. Here he is at the end of the season, still in charge, and they've won another trophy.
Yeah, and it's all pointing Stoney that Sarri's going to be leaving to go off to Juventus.
Yeah.
The fact that Agnelli, the president of Juventus, was in the team hotel talking
apparently
to Bruce Buck. Yeah. Pictures of that conversation. May have been a coincidence, but who knows? But I would imagine they would have been talking about some sort of compensation payment for him to be leaving Chelsea to go out there to Juventus. And for Sarri, he's not too popular with the supporters, my friends.
Don't like
they're not having him.
No, they don't like the football, but I thought they played the much better football last night.
Yeah, well, there's been a few bits, hasn't there? Moses, who was so good as a right wing back, has been bombed out completely and sent out on loan. Gary Cahill, who's been a fantastic player for Chelsea, he's been bombed out completely. And more often than not, he's not even been in the squad. Kante's been playing on that right side of a diamond in midfield, which is not really his best position.
No.
So he's come under a lot of criticism for that. So, and then the substitutions as well, the non-stop between Barkley, I think it's Kovacic.
And Jorginho.
Yeah, Jorginho just going backwards and forwards. They're not happy with that. So I think overall, and the way Roman seems to like it, that he likes to change manager on a regular basis to keep it fresh. I can only imagine to keep it fresh. And the managers, as you rightly say, they come in, they win trophies. He gets rid of the next manager who brings in the next one. But with Pulisic coming in to replace Hazard, it's going to be very interesting. I'd imagine they'll get Zouma back from Everton.
Yes.
And I thought they would play Zouma with Rudiger.
And Tammy Abraham might be back
Tammy
as well.
Tammy Abraham coming in back. I'm not sure if Mason Mount, who's been on loan and done a good job at Derby, will be ready for that level yet, top level Premier League. But so whoever's going to take that job at Chelsea once he does go, if he does go, I think he will, then it's going to be a real challenge because you've got some good young players coming through.
Has it been a good season, though, for Chelsea? I mean, they got to the final of the Carabao Cup. They finished third, albeit a distant third in the Premier League, and they won the Europa League. I mean, of course, from the outside, you look at it and go, that has been a good season. But most Chelsea fans I talk to, they haven't enjoyed it at all this year. I had one of my Chelsea mates said to me he hated this season more than he hated the season when they finished 10th. I mean, I'm serious.
Fun. Yeah, you are serious and you're absolutely right. And all these people that have been complaining about the direct style of football at Chelsea, and they wanted Chelsea to play like more like the Barcelona, a ticky-tacky type of tip-tap football, passing it all around the pitch. Well, that's what you're getting now. and that's what you're moaning about, and that's what you're not happy about. And I've been to Chelsea with those supporters, and they say the football's so boring.
Yeah.
Well, that is what you've wanted, and that is now what you've got, and you're still not happy.
No, it does seem that way. Now, as we've been saying, the Champions League final in Madrid on Saturday will see one of Mauricio Pochettino and Jurgen Klopp win their first trophy for their respective clubs. Klopp has just guided Liverpool to their most successful season in Premier League history, but does he need silverware to be regarded as a Liverpool great? Joining us now is the author of Jurgen Klopp's unofficial biography, Lee Price. Good morning, Lee.
Morning, gents. How you getting on?
Yeah, I've had better mornings. Now, how has... hey, he asked, I'm telling him. How has Klopp changed things, and how has he changed himself since joining Liverpool?
Yeah, two different questions, but the same sort of thing. He's changed things dramatically for Liverpool. He's come into a club that was kind of all over the place. You think of the transfer committee and Brendan Rodgers and how much that was criticised. He's made it into one seamless process. Every single signing has appeared to work. They're even spending money now, which is just kind of crazy. And he's united the fans and the club in a way that didn't seem possible beyond myth. And he has changed himself, almost the reverse journey. He's softened himself. He's actually hardened his approach to transfers and the cynical side of the game. At Dortmund, when they lost the Champions League final to Bayern in 2013, he made comments before and after that game about, I want to win things the right way, I don't want to just buy success. And actually, I think he's had to swallow his pride in some instances and say, do you know what? We are going to spend a record fee on Virgil van Dijk. We are going to spend a record fee on Alisson, because if we don't, we can't compete with Man City. So I think he's had to make compromises, which is a weird way to describe spending £150 million. But he has brought a lot of love to Liverpool, and that's all they've ever wanted, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it does feel that way. Sorry, Martin, you want to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was just looking through his track record there of his seven finals. He's won one and lost six. What's that all about?
A lot of that, you could say, is bad luck. I mean, the first Liverpool final, the Europa League final against Sevilla, they should have won that. The final against Real Madrid, you know, that can happen when you play Real Madrid in the final. Gareth Bale's won the goal. That does happen. And with Dortmund, again, they were the second force in Germany. They weren't the dominant team. They weren't Bayern. So you can explain some of it away. But I think if they lose on Saturday and it goes to another lost final, then it starts to lurk over him quite a lot, doesn't it?
It does feel that way.
Saturday night.
Yeah, no. Saturday feels like a seminal point for him in terms of the Liverpool project. I mean, they are favourites. When I'm looking down the list, I'm not sure they were favourites from many of the cup finals that his team's been playing in. Certainly the ones against Bayern Munich and Man City and Real Madrid in the Champions League. In terms of the connection with the city, with the fans, I mean, he couldn't really have done a much better job, could he?
No, and that's classic Klopp. He's all about the connection. When he left his first club, where he was player for a long time, too, Mainz, he was crying on the podium as they bid him goodbye. He doesn't want to do it if he's not in love.
No.
Which is, you know, kind of romantic. We could all learn something from him in that sense, I think.
Well, it's all a little bit, to be honest, it's a little bit Scouse, isn't it? In a strange way. That sentimental, emotional thing that they do better than anyone in football, he has tapped right into that, hasn't he?
He's galvanised that football club, Stoney. He's bought all the players, the supporters.
Yeah, but he's one of them. That's the point I'm making,
together,
Mike. Would you agree, Lee?
It's made him powerful, hasn't it?
It's always been his approach too. So I think when he would have spoken to Liverpool back before he joined, he would have realised very early, Christ, all the work that I usually do, all the team bonding trips that he would do at Dortmund or Mainz, where they'd go to live in a little hut in the German outback for 5 days, no electricity,
right,
to get them closer together. A lot of that stuff was to build the connection, to build this feeling. When he got to Liverpool, he would have realised in his first few days, a lot of that groundwork's been laid. I just need to build on it. And he's fully embraced the club. He's embraced the legends. Whereas someone like Brendan Rodgers couldn't accept certain legends lurking around the training ground or the club, Jurgen Klopp has embraced them. And that's totally what Liverpool needed and totally what Klopp needs. So it is a match made in heaven if they start winning finals.
Yeah.
And tell us about this book that you've wrote then.
Yeah, so basically, when he was appointing Liverpool boss, I'd spent a bit of time at Dortmund, a bit of time with him. And I knew there'd be an official book coming out. So I thought I would just fast track my own version and get the unofficial book out. Just things like the stories that maybe he wouldn't have told.
Oh, Have we lost Lee there? It sounds like we might have lost Lee. Lee, are you there? No, I think we've lost him.
I'd like to read that book. I thought that would be a fascinating book to find some insights into what's not out public yet.
We'll try and get Lee back. I think the point that I was asking about embracing the city. I mean, Liverpool is an unusual place. It's a very passionate place. We talked about when they beat Barcelona in the semi-final. That result does not happen really at any other football club in the world, I think.
It was an unbelievable night.
It was an unbelievable night. And I think it's partly down to the way the people are in the city. And I think that Klopp has tapped into that. The first time, remember when they played West Brom and they drew 2-2 at home and he got the players to all line up in front of them. Have we got Lee back? Lee, you there?
Hello.
There you are. We're just talking. As soon as you started talking about the book, it went. I mean, that is terrible. But
that is a sign.
Yeah. So, just tell us a bit about the book. You spent time in Dortmund and you spent time with him.
Yeah, and I've got a few little lines and insights that maybe wouldn't make the official book, you know, the polished, tidied up version. But I think that's what makes Klopp so lovable, the way he had to learn the hard way. He's like quite a loving father figure type hugger. That is the opposite of his dad, which might surprise you. He learned from his father growing up tough love. He told me a story about where he used to go skiing with his dad, and he'd never ever talk to his dad while skiing, because all he would see is his dad disappearing into the distance, urging him to catch up, that sort of father figure. So I think Klopp learned from his childhood, that's not what I want to be.
His father, who would abandon him up a mountain, essentially, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
As he skied off. I'll see you at the bottom, Jürgen. Okay, you'll make it all the way down. Hilarious.
And it'd be that drive for perfection from his dad. When actually, in Klopp's playing career was not perfection. It was a modest playing career. I mean, it was a professional playing career.
Yeah.
So still pretty good. But he learned, you know, a lot of human skills and life skills the hard way. So that when he got to Dortmund, when he got to Liverpool, he has a lot of perspective, a lot of context, and that he can ground these players and actually speak from the heart. And that all sounds like simple stuff, but it's quite key, isn't it?
Absolutely key, yeah.
Yeah, it does seem that way. And like I say, we were talking about that connection with the city, and it's also about businesses as well. I mean, I was reading something, a piece yesterday, about how businesses are queuing up to do business with Liverpool because of him.
Yeah, well, if you sponsor Liverpool, you know, an official noodle partner, whatever it is these days, and you get access to Jürgen Klopp, that is dynamite for your brand, because he's great on camera. He's engaging, he's recognisable, and has great teeth too.
He has outstanding teeth, even for Liverpool.
He could do a Colgate advert, couldn't he?
I mean, Firmino has got those great Scouse teeth. Steve McManaman, John Bishop, mate of mine, great Scouse teeth. And there's no doubt Jürgen Klopp. But it does feel like Saturday is building up to a crucial night for Liverpool, and they have to win because they are big favourites, aren't they?
Yeah, they're huge favourites, and it'll be a watershed moment for him. I think he's a great place in his career. He missed out on the Bayern Munich job in 2007, and since then he's been determined to win the Champions League away from Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
I think if he does win on Saturday, he then might think, I can finally accept an offer from Bayern Munich. But that's maybe for next summer, not to scare Liverpool fans too much.
No. So the book is called?
How the Klopp Ticks.
I see what you did there. Very nicely. How the Klopp Ticks, available in all good bookshops. Thanks for joining us. That's the author of the unofficial biography of Jürgen Klopp, Lee Price there. Yeah, he does seem like the perfect fit for that club. It seems like he's just exactly the person to manage Liverpool, being the emotional thing he's got. He just connects with the city.
Yeah, just thinking about it, Stoney. We've seen recently Guardiola gone onto the cup final pitch when they'd won, and he was next to Raheem Sterling, giving him guidance about his performance.
At the end of a season.
Didn't do this, you should have done this, whatever Guardiola was saying to him. We've also seen over the last couple of years, at the end of games, Jürgen Klopp stride out from the technical area at the end of games onto the pitch, and put his arm round players and say, you know, and actually give it to the players about performance, what they could have done. And it springs to mind about your Daniel Sturridge a few times. Bang on, bang on, bang on. That full desire and intensity to win. You don't often see that happening out on the pitch.
If you're a player, you want to play for him, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
shadow of a doubt.
I mean, above most of the managers, you want to play for either Klopp or Pochettino or Guardiola, right? It's those three that you look at and go, of course I want to turn out for them because they can make me better. That's what you want.
Oh, yes.
He's made them so much better, hasn't he, the players at Liverpool?
Robertson, the left back. Yeah. What a player.
Trent, how good is he now? I know, they are going to be a force. But again, it comes back to what Lee was saying. They have to get a result Saturday. I think it's time that they won a cup final for him.
Yeah, for him, with his record in cup finals, six defeats is not good.
They need that one. They're up against a very determined Spurs side who have had an amazing run in the Champions League. Big game on Saturday, Champions League final. We will be all over it here on Love Sport Radio.
This is Love Sport.
You may have heard, I may have mentioned that Chelsea won 4-1 last night in the Europa League final. Eden Hazard scored two goals, made another one, and it looks like he is off. Let's have a chat with a Chelsea fan and a good friend of mine, Mr. Ivor Badil. Good morning, Ivor.
Morning, Ian. How are you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling fabulous, mate. How are you feeling?
I'm very happy. I've watched the highlights again about 15 times. It was a magnificent performance.
Do you think it was more about Chelsea playing well or Arsenal just basically surrendering in an abject manner?
Well, you know what? There was a lot of talk before the game about the pressure on both teams, and a lot of the talk was that the pressure was all off Chelsea. And you know those games that teams that have, when teams are relegated, suddenly the pressure's off them and they start winning. And it was a bit like that. Chelsea, they wanted to put on a show, probably because it's Hazard's last game, maybe even Sarri's last game. And, certainly the second half, they stepped up again. They played really good football.
They did.
And, I thought defensively, Arsenal were really poor. And, the body language of Arsenal. I think their heads dropped quite early. And there wasn't a lot of fight there from Arsenal.
No.
Getting back to 3-1, my youngest brother, Dan, at that point sent a message about the great Kanu comeback that you may remember. I think when Chelsea was 2-0 up and he scored three goals or something like that many years ago. But then when we got the fourth, that was a kick in the teeth.
It could have been embarrassing at that point, but you won 4-1 last night. Let's talk about this.
No, let's carry on talking about this.
I'd like to chat to you about the films. You produced two films on anti-Semitism in football. Now, tell us about how this came about and what the films discuss.
Well, the first one was quite a few years ago. It was about 8-9 years ago. And me and my brother, this David, this one, not Dan, we were at Chelsea. I can't remember who we were playing, but at half-time, the other scores of the other games came up on the scoreboard and Tottenham were losing, I think, at home to Hull. And obviously that provoked a reaction from the Chelsea fans. And then about three or four rows behind us, this lone voice stood up and he basically, obviously I can't use a word, but he just stood up and shouted, F the Y word. And then this is really strange. And then we think somebody kind of nudged him and said, actually, there's quite a lot of Jewish people around here. And he just suddenly, in a heartbeat, sort of changed from me and went, then F the Jews.
Yeah.
And, this was really shocking. And I stood up. I'm Jewish. And I stood up and turned around. And he was about three or four rows behind. And there was, an unpleasant confrontation. So I'm not a man who likes confrontation. But I did sort of crack in that situation. And then afterwards, he did shut up and everyone was saying, well done, he did the right thing. But I felt awful.
You have to do that sort of thing at a football game? Yeah. That's the point.
Exactly. But then it reminded me of, I've been going to Chelsea for 40 years now. And I remember one of the first times I went, just standing in the shed, hearing this weird chant that I thought was just, yo. I didn't know what it was. So I sort of joined in until someone told me what it was.
Yeah.
And from that point, I felt uncomfortable. And then this is almost 40-odd years later, and it's still going on. And it kind of felt at the time that, footballers, tried hard to deal with a lot of its issues. But this was an issue that it hadn't really sort of dealt with.
And still hasn't been dealt with. I mean, I watched Spurs the other week, and there were 60,000 people in the stadium, and they were all using the Y word. And they basically said that they've reclaimed it because they have a lot of Jewish fans. What's your view about that?
Well, it's nonsense. It's not nonsense. I understand Tottenham's point of view, but I was on this Sky show the other day, and there's a statement from Tottenham saying that their fans originally claim the word, excuse me, in order to deflect the chance that were aimed at them. Okay, even, I'm prepared to accept that. But the point is, if that is the aim, it clearly hasn't worked. This is the point, because if there's a parallel with black people reclaiming the N-word, whatever you think about that, and that is a divisive issue in the black community, but whatever you think about that, it, by and large, it has worked. People are aware of the word and aware of what a horrible word it is and don't use it.
Yeah, but also, most Tottenham fans aren't Jewish.
Well, I know that, but that's another terrible confusion. But this is Tottenham's statement saying, you know, they adopted the word to deflect the insults, but it hasn't worked, because what it's done is made other fans chant it back at them and then chant horrendous things as well.
It's so not
their stated aim hasn't worked.
It's not so much the Tottenham fans using it; it's the West Ham and Chelsea fans specifically giving it back to them. I mean,
can I just say one thing? One thing. I've been thinking about this because I'm trying to think. Sorry, it is very early. I think we need to establish very clearly. Forget about football. Forget that we're both football fans of different, you know, sports, different clubs. You know, I think it's very clear. If someone came up to you and I in the street outside of football and called us a Y word, there is no question that that would be offensive. Am I correct in that?
Completely. I mean, we're not even using the word in the studio this morning. I mean, we have done in the past, but we're not. No, of course it's offensive. But let's be fair, one says a lot of offensive things at football that you absolutely would not say on the street. I've called Frank Lampard and Frank LeBerf and various Chelsea players all sorts of nasty words that I would not say to them.
Just called Frank.
No, anyone. Yes, any Franks. They just bother me in all sorts of ways. So there is language that you use. It's a contract that you sort of sign within a football stadium. I don't think most of those Tottenham fans would use the Y word, or most of the West Ham or Chelsea fans, in fact, would use the Y word in a derogatory way outside of a football context.
No, I agree. And that's partly because of the ridiculous confusion that I think a lot of them don't even know what it means. I mean, this is part of what we've tried to do, is that first and foremost to say it doesn't just mean Tottenham fans. I would even argue that some of the fans in the most recent film we made, there's a horrendous chant where, I'm not sure which fans it was, but it was at the World Cup last summer. There were some fans chanting Spurs are on their way to Auschwitz.
Yes, Hitler's going to gas them again, yes.
I mean, it doesn't get more horrendous than that.
No.
But, you know, I would argue that possibly, so they don't even, they think they're just being anti-Tottenham. They honestly, even at that level, I think they just think they're having a go at Tottenham. It's got that confusing.
Yes.
And there's a sort of parallel that I've used before that you know, I really don't want it to come over as having a go at Tottenham. I'm just saying the confusion it causes. If I was a Jewish Tottenham fan walking down the street and somebody called me a Y word, I'd have to say, are you calling me that because I'm Jewish or because I'm a Spurs fan? I need to know before I'm offended.
It's very interesting.
That's a ridiculous confusion.
It is ridiculous. I've got my producer is typing a few bits on the screen, which I have to read to you. Why do Spurs and even Ajax fans want to claim the Jewish heritage when they typically have so few Jewish fans? And then it says, are Jews actually super cool? Well, we are, aren't we? I mean, me and you are fine examples. We are the James Dean of broadcasting, of course.
You've got two of the coolest Jews on your show.
Yes, which doesn't... Oh, it's not a high bar.
Julie. No.
Well, why do they want to reclaim that Jewish heritage then? I mean, what...
From what I understand, so Tottenham in London is not far from Stamford Hill, which is a very Jewish area.
Very.
A lot of Jewish immigrants there in the 50s. So Tottenham... For that reason, as far as I can fathom, identified, and they have had Jewish chairman over the years as well. And then what they say is that because they say they identified, I mean, these are non-Jews identifying with the Jewish community, that then other fans started being antisocial towards them, which, as I say, that may well be the case. But, you know, now 40, 50, 60 years down the line, when it's we're having chants like the one we just talked about, surely now it's time to stop. It's just that confusion, go on.
No, Ivor, I just wanted to say, before I let you go, I mean, it's all very well, you and David obviously very prominent and people know him and that's great and everything. Shouldn't this come from Tottenham fans?
Yes. But well, they are doing the consultation, I think, over the summer. But yes, there's been very, very little other than that they trot out that same sort of trite
reclaiming statement,
same thing over and over again. And I really think they need to properly grapple with it and acknowledge it and get involved in the debate. Because it is a debate. I'm not interested in banning words or censorship. I would rather have the debate properly. And hopefully, over a period of time, you know, people come to the decision that it's a word that shouldn't be said.
Ivor, lovely to speak to you this morning.
Always
above
a joy.
All mornings.
Love Sport.
The Champions League final in Madrid will see Spurs manager Mauricio Pochettino face off against the Liverpool boss Jurgen Klopp as they fight for their first piece of silverware for their respective sides. Liverpool finished on 97 points in the league, so perhaps should be considered favourites, but Spurs fans will believe it is their year after dramatic victories over Manchester City and Ajax. Joining us now is the former Spurs defender, Graham Roberts. Good morning, Graham.
Morning, Martin.
Morning, Robbo. You've upset Stoney.
No, listen, you know what it was, Robbo? It was just the fact that your tweet yesterday, anybody know what time the Arsenal parade is today and qualifying for Europa League again? Yeah, that was extremely funny. We did have a trophy parade planned. By the way, Graham, a trophy parade, that's like when you go around the streets when you've won a trophy. You wouldn't know about
that. I know that, mate.
You do know that.
I've done that plenty of times.
So no here problem. We go. This is
I've
part...
done it about 9 times, I think. So
okay. Were you playing for another team on the side?
No. The 2 FA Cups, the UEFA Cup, League Championship with Rangers, League Cup with Rangers, League Championship with Chelsea. Well, there was a few more there.
Did you do the UEFA Cup with Tony Parks in goal?
Yeah, I was captain, mate.
You were? Yeah, you did play in that team. Let's
that
talk
shut about... you up, Ian.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
Do you know what? I've got to be honest. You gave it. There were more there than I was expecting. I'll be honest with you. Anyway, let's get back. Yeah, let's not talk about last night. That game is now finished. They're dead to me. What chance do you give Spurs? I mean, this is a brilliant Liverpool team. I think we've all seen how good they are. Spurs have a chance, but they're underdogs, aren't they?
Oh, 100%. But the one thing that has happened in the last 3 weeks is the manager's got 25 players the first time this year who are all fit. I was there on Tuesday and you couldn't believe it. It was like pre-season all over again and everybody was fit. Like, he's not had one... When having spoken to him afterwards, he said it's the first time this season that he's had 24 players on the training pitch. Yeah.
Now, Robbo, the big question I've got for you, Robbo, is do you think he'll start with Harry Kane or will he use him as a substitute for that last half hour?
I think he'll play him, mate. I think looking at Harry the other day, he was flying in training. You know, why would you not play your best striker?
Because he hasn't played in 8 weeks. I mean, this is not about Tottenham or anything. I'm just asking the question.
Yeah, well,
if you're manager of a team...
Fabinho hasn't played for 4 or 5 weeks, so he's sort of been on the... He's had injuries, he's not come on. So, you know, I think it's a one game. It's a one game.
Behind closed doors sort of friendly games where he could have perhaps had an hour?
I'm not sure. I never asked that. I think they've had the like the under 21s and the under 23s. They've been training, so I think they've had games. But when you've got 24 players, you can have two games anyway. You can have a game against each other. Yeah. So you know, it's been a hard 2 or 3 weeks for the boys. But the thing about it is, I think the one thing that they have in their favour is Liverpool were in a momentum. They won lots of games, but they never won the league. And I think that's a plus for Tottenham because they will be a bit down, not getting 97 points and not winning the league. Like the lad on, I think, another radio station said they should get a trophy for finishing second.
Yeah.
Oh, that was amazing. That was.
Graham, I understand the point you're making. I wanted to ask about, I mean, not that I want to go back to last night, but it was obvious that the best player on the pitch, Eden Hazard, won that game, right? He was an outstanding, he's a match winner. And in the end, in general, at this level, it is about the match winners, right? And would you think that Spurs have as many as Liverpool? It strikes me that Liverpool maybe have a couple more. I don't know.
Well, I think you're going to let down the lines of Salah. But if you go back a few weeks ago, we played them at Anfield with 2 or 3 players out, 4 players out. We should have won the game and we nearly cost them the league then. Sissoko had a great chance. Dele Alli had a great chance. Eriksen had a great chance. Second half, we absolutely battered them. And we played like that against Liverpool. We always play really well against Liverpool. And, okay, they beat us twice this year. But if you have a look at the goals that have gone in, Hugo has dropped two clangers. So hopefully he won't do that on Saturday. So let's sort of look at the positives. Yes, I believe that they have, listen, they have a great side. I think if you stop the two fullbacks, then you have a great chance of beating them.
Yeah.
You going out there, Robbo?
I'm going on Saturday morning, mate. Yeah. Apparently, but if we win, I'm coming back 2 months later.
Well, if you win, I'd never want to talk to you again, Graham. I mean, it's nice to chat and everything. You seem like a decent fella, but after Saturday, that's it for us. I mean, this Tottenham team. We've been saying for a while they have to buy, but they've obviously done an amazing job with the players they've got. But if the unthinkable happens and you do win the Champions League, you do have to start buying, don't you? Because at that point, surely Daniel Levy would go, actually, it's worth spending money on this team.
Yes, definitely. I think they'll spend money anyway in the summer. You know, there's rumours going around there's £100 to £200 billion. So with the getting to the final, I think that's a bit more coffers in the pot. So, yeah. You know, there'd be a lot of other teams, Ian, that would like some money to spend. You know, no disrespect, but Arsenal are in trouble now because they have to get rid of Ozil. Ozil is not an Arsenal player. All right, I don't care what people tell me. Last night when he came off, he was a disgrace.
Well, he got booed by the fans, so yes, you know what we felt the same way. Listen, Graham, it's been nice knowing you.
Well, for a day.
For a day, and I hope you enjoy your trip over to Madrid.
Love sports.
Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.